Move into agenda item four. This is Lands 2020. This is a briefing and public comment. Cynthia Wilkerson and Lisa Kaufman, please.
Thank you, Chair Carpenter. Good morning, Commission. Good morning, Director, for a moment, I guess, Deputy Director. Happy to be here to talk with you about our annual Lands 2020 suite of projects. I'm here with Lisa Kaufman, our Lands 2020 coordinator. And just confirming with Nikki, are you going to be running the slides or am I supposed to run the slides?
I can. I hadn't been asked, but.
Okay, sorry. If you could, if it's easy for you, that would be great. If not.
Give me 2 seconds here.
Okay. While you're doing that, I heard the question there from Isaac about e-bikes. So I thought I'd just give you a really quick update with regards to the legislation. There is legislation, it's SB 5452. And as amended, it has a few major components, but it requires DNR and DFW to go through the process and create a report with regards to where e-bikes would be allowed on natural surface trail or roads and trails on our lands. That report currently in legislation is, as drafted, is to be produced by September 2022. And the Senate operating budget did have funding for $100,000 for DFW to do that body of work, which is very helpful and necessary. And there is also the new amendment allows for interim allowance of those with ADA placards to be able to utilize e-bikes in areas where mountain bikes are allowed. This process overall will take quite a bit of extensive inventory and analysis of our roads and trails, but is being incorporated into our work on our recreation strategy. So quick update while we get this going. Thank you so much, Nikki. Move to the next slide. Thanks. So just a reminder, this is Lands 2020, a clear vision for the future. It is not the year 2020, it is Lands 2020 as in Vision 2020. So what we're here to talk about is a suite of projects that the department is looking at and interested in pursuing conversations on potential acquisition. It's not a final decision. This is basically to keep the door open for the conversations on some of these. And all the projects are often in various stages of development. I will let you move forward. Just a reminder, WDFW lands protect land and water for wildlife and people. Our vision is a wildlife where fish and wildlife thrive, or Washington where fish and wildlife thrive in healthy habitats, and where people experience and enjoy our state's natural gifts for generations to come. And we do we manage our lands in service to our mission. And the primary things we do is provide access for fishing, hunting, and other wildlife-related recreation, foster experiences and exploration, and preserve natural and cultural heritage. So just again, a reminder of process. We have strategic acquisition principles and process, and we are the reasons why we own and manage land on behalf of the state of Washington and Washingtonians are fairly straightforward: to conserve and restore the diversity of our fish and wildlife species and habitats, to enhance sustainable fishing and hunting and other wildlife-related outdoor opportunities, to improve the management of our current land portfolio, and we're consistent with our wildlife conservation mandate mission, preserve working lands for agriculture, forestry, and other sectors of the outdoor common economy, particularly in rural areas. When we are going through the Lands 2020 processes in an internal process where we ask the questions, first of all, we only work with willing sellers. We look at partnership opportunities and alternatives. We ask if our ownership is the best conservation alternative. We look at whether conservation easements can meet the conservation need. We focus on long-term opportunities and ecological values, larger contiguous habitats, key connectivity corridors, that kind of thing. And obviously are focused on the ecological and social importance of what WWW management would bring. So the acquisition steps, just to remind us where we are, we have, you know, in the regions, there's often a lot of people come in and are interested in DFW purchasing their land. So there's a lot of initial conversations and scoping and need that bubbles up into things that seem viable and are run through this internal lands 2020 process. That that process brings applications internally every year. And in the fall, we go through a statewide analysis of those. And I would say that one thing I want to note in this schema here is that the stakeholders, the board from local, regional to statewide interest is integrated into all the entire process here on the screen. So early on, as well as in Lands 2020, and as you know, we have the public comment period engagement in Lands 2020. After the director's approval of a project in Lands 2020, that project has a 6-year life approval for basically it's the green light for us to continue to work on it and continue to develop what it would look like and work with the stakeholders and communities involved. So we move from there to pursuing funding, to continuing outreach and developing what the actual acquisition would look like. And then we move into, if all continues forward, the actual land transaction itself and the real estate due diligence associated with that. And if we get through that process and become the fee title or easement owners, then we begin to integrate those bodies of land into our ownership, which again has an integrated component of outreach in it as well as we develop our wildlife area plans with the wildlife area advisory committees. That's fine. All right. So now I'm going to move us to Lisa. She's going to talk us through the 6 projects that we have this year. And as you can see, we've got 4 on the east side of the state and 2 in Region 6. So take it away, Lisa.
Be sure to unmute yourself, Lisa.
Yep, I did. Good morning. So as Cynthia mentioned, we have 6 projects this year that we're excited to tell you about. They start over in Region 1. Can we move to the next slide, Nikki? So this is the Ebsen Water Access Project, and it is located on the Grand Ronde River in Asotin County, 7.3 acres. Next slide. So this ensures public boating and fishing access to the Grand Ronde River. So this is operated and maintained currently by Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife through an agreement from the property owner and has been for quite a while. So this, the original property owner decided to sell this. The Wild Steelhead Coalition went ahead and bought this with the intention of donating it to the department, which we are now in the process of getting this looked at and done and things done on this one after it's through the Lands 2020. So this provides public access to the Grand Ronde River for fishing and wildlife viewing and is a very busy area. It currently has 5 designated camping sites on the property, 3 gravel parking pads, 2 ADA accessible parking spots, concrete vault toilets, and blacktop parking spaces with a gravel boat launch. And again, it is also supported by the Wild Steelhead Coalition and also several others. There are several fly fishing places out in this area that have stood behind this one. Next slide. So this is also in Region 1. This is the Maloney Mountain. And you'll see that it's an in-holding to the Wooten Wildlife Area, the red area there. And next slide. This is in Columbia County. It is 145 acres. It protects intact riparian habitat with associated wetland areas. It has recreational opportunities, including hunting, wildlife viewing, bird watching, hiking, and outdoor activities. The incorporation of the property into the wildlife area would ensure long-term protection and enhanced management efficiencies for the current WDFW lands. Next slide. Now we're moving into region two. This is very north in region two. So this is IHOT and Driscoll Island. The department currently owns the majority of the island, actually all of the island except for this portion, which is that small red portion you see on the bottom. Driscoll and IHOT Island is this property 16.5 acres. The acquisition would protect the last remaining parcel on the island. It is critical riparian habitat with a diverse array of species, including Columbia River steelhead and Pacific lamprey. It provides expanded outdoor opportunity for wildlife viewing, outdoor exploration photography, and upland bird hunting. Also, to note on this property is that most of the island that we currently own does have an ag lease on it, and this could be wrapped up into that. It has been ag leased since 1974 when we bought the first property on this island, and fares very well with the habitat that we protect here and also the recreation in this area. Next slide. So Chester Butte expansion, also in region two, is a semi-end holding here. It is actually edge holding between two different units, the Chester Butte area and the Sagebrush Flat unit. Next slide. So this is 640 acres. The property is immediately adjacent to those wildlife area units. Property was burned in the 2020 Pearl Hill fire. It supports sage grouse, Washington ground squirrel, and pygmy rabbit management. Connectivity would provide additional public access, benefit habitat values and protections in the regions. Property provides opportunities for viewing shrub steppe species, as well as quality hunting for mule deer, Hungarian partridge, and other game animals. This has support from Conservation Northwest. Next slide. Okay, now we are moving into the west side. This is the Chehalis Wildlife Area expansion. So this map needs a little bit of explanation. You notice the red and purple areas. We previously approved through Lands 2020, the purple area that you see on the map. And now we are adding the red areas to that and restarting the clock for the purple areas. So this will all restart the six-year clock that Cynthia mentioned earlier. Next slide. And this actual photo is actually a photo of the property, an aerial photo of the property. The wettest area that you see in this photo is actually the current wildlife area. And then the rest of the property is in here and in, or to the left and to the right of that area. This is up to 1,504 acres. It protects floodplain, riparian, and wetland habitats. It expands the current Chehalis wildlife area. Approximately two-thirds of this project was proposed previously, like I mentioned, in 2016. Various fish and waterfowl species are protected, including the endemic Olympic mud minnow, coho salmon, and other salmonids. Recreation opportunities for hunting, hiking, and wildlife viewing here. This is supported by Ducks Unlimited, Grays Harbor Audubon Society, Conservation Northwest, Migratory Bird Stamp, and ART Program. Next slide. And the Centralia Mine Project. So you'll notice in this map, the red areas located on this map are not included in this proposal. And the pink area is other private property, also not included in the proposal. Next slide. The Centralia Mine Project brings up to 9,800 acres. This is a multi-phase project of donation acquisition of the Centralia Mine. Diverse array of habitats that already exist on the site. Property will form a new wildlife area close to urban centers, allowing users to connect with diverse nature. Current habitat supports a variety of fish and wildlife, including elk, deer, salmon, warm water fish, and others. Rare opportunity to manage a landscape that allows room for creation or restoration of high quality wildlife habitats, such as wetlands, grasslands, and to benefit waterfowl, amphibians, mammals, reptiles, and fish. The potential to provide habitat for threatened and endangered species, including the western pond turtle, Oregon spotted frog, and streak horn lark are here. Adding public lands to this region would benefit the local economy as well as public access. This project is supported by TransAlta, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Conference of Grace Harbor, Grace Harbor Otter of Puget Sound Anglers, and some of the projects.
Thanks, Lisa. I did want to just highlight one issue with the map. There is the one of the inholdings in there. I'm just letting you know, the pink one is private property owned. By the internet or an entity that we would only work with in the case that they were willing sellers. So I'll go down to the public comments now. So we had a public comment period that was, I think it ended up being 5 weeks because we had a couple of requests for extensions. And overall, we received 267 comments. The vast majority of those, 235, were in support. The themes that the support touched on were the values of these acquisitions for enhancing open space and outdoor recreation, for providing connectivity for wildlife, for enhanced wildlife habitat and species protection, and also for public access to be able to utilize these lands. And then you saw on each slide some of the various organizational supports. So we also received some concerns, 26 letters of our comments with expressing concern and some pretty outstanding levels of concern that have generated much discussion and will continue to do so. And so those were around issues of being able to ensure that land accessibility stays intact, concerns from particularly in Lewis County about the impact of taking land off of the private tax rolls, the impact on the local economy in Lewis County, the impact with related to our ability to manage lands and the operating budget associated with the O&M needs. Pretty clear concerns voiced in opposition by local governments and industry. Really, these are generated from the Centralia Mine Project in large part, and then the Chehalis Addition Project did have some comments from local working lands entities. And we just did get an additional one that you received yesterday as well in that category. And then we had, in addition to the Lewis County Commissioner letter of opposition and the letter from their prosecuting attorney's office, as well as those, as you see, the cities of Morton, Mossy Rock, Navapine, Piel, Toledo, Vader, and Winlock. The cities of Centralia and Chehalis sent letters of raising some issues and some concerns and asking questions and asking for engagement, which is similar to what we also heard from the Grace Harbor County Commissioners about that other project. In Region 6. So overall, we have taken this as a good sign that there's a lot of interest in these projects, and we will, we're committed to continuing to work with those communities and pursue the conversations as we move forward. The next steps for LANS 2020 and for these projects is the director's approval to continue to pursue the projects. So we wanted to be really clear that this does not mean any of these are a done deal, although some of them are further along than others, like the Epson donation in Region 1 along the Grand Ronde is probably going to happen the quickest. You may see that fairly soon. But others are likely, you know, months to years before you would be seeing them again if they come to fruition after the continued engagement and development. So after that, we will begin exploring the funding opportunities. We will again be continuing discussions and outreach. And if we get to, you know, a good match and momentum moving forward, then we can move into, as I said, the real estate transaction processing. And that when we get to the final piece of that is when we come back to the Fish and Wildlife Commission for approval of any final land acquisitions. And so it's often quite a long time. That's why we have that 6-year time frame for approval of LANS 2020. And then again, as mentioned, we integrate those lands into our land management moving forward. So that's what we have. And I do have a few other staff here willing to engage or answer questions, should you have any particular questions on any of the individual projects.
Thank you, ladies. That was a very good presentation. We have two hands up currently. Commissioner Thorburn first, and then Commissioner Anderson second, please.
Thanks for the presentation, Cynthia and Lisa. My question is about the Chehalis Wildlife Area Expansion Project. I guess I was on the commission when we approved the first boundaries, but I'll use the excuse that all new commissioners use. I was a new commissioner at the time, and I don't have recollection of that. I was wondering, we're hearing some concerns from the agricultural community about the expansion and the change of community character that it might lead to, perhaps. I was wondering if we could have a little bit more of the history from the first approval. It looks like we really haven't done anything in terms of further expansion between 2016 and now. What has that been? Funding, not willing sellers. What's happened between 2016 and also, was there earlier concern from the agricultural community about this wildlife area?
Well, I think I'm going to let Brian Calkins address the majority of that question, Commissioner. Thank you for the question. I would note that there has been a recent purchase of an 88-acre parcel that you did approve recently in that almanac.
Thanks, Cynthia. And that's correct. We did purchase an 88-acre parcel in the area that was previously approved. I do not recall a lot of resistance on that first LANS 2020 approval that went through. And very recently, there's a dairy, what currently is a dairy farm, was not in that first proposal. We would have loved to include it then, but the landowner wasn't interested. And in the last year, I think it was in the last year, they came to us asking if we would like to acquire it. And there's really the eastern part of that farm that's adjacent to our current ownership is the part of the property that we're most interested in. It's the wettest. It's got a stream that needs some restoration work, and it would fold nicely into the current wildlife area management, perhaps even enhance the management of the current property. On the remainder, we have heard concerns And we are certainly open to working with the community on other options on that part of it.
Thank you for that. Commissioner Anderson, please.
That discussion is helpful to me. I was going to raise that ag land impact and its effect on existing dairy farm. And as I mentioned, I think, I'm losing track, maybe it was yesterday in the Wildlife Committee where we had a little discussion about this. I live on property that's part of the one and only dairy farm in remaining in Pierce County. And that just breaks my heart considering how much land used to be in dairy and available for that purpose. And so I very much support looking at this creatively and flexibly, understand what we're trying to accomplish. But at the same time, you know, I go back to trying to work with communities and work with people and existing conditions that and situations that are in these basins. So thanks for reiterating that you are being flexible and working on this. I very much support the Lands 2020 process as a whole. I think it's a good system. Tease it up, lets a lot of people engage, and allows enough time to do this right. So I applaud you for that system.
Thank you, Commissioner Anderson. Okay, I have two hands up. Commissioner Linville, and then I see Larry Phillips has his hand up.
Yes, thank you, Chair Carpenter. I would just echo what Commissioner Anderson just said about agricultural lands and also what he said about the 2020 process. I also appreciate that it's, you know, not just jumping right in with both feet, but taking a thoughtful approach. And I appreciate that. I guess as a land manager myself, every one of these properties, every time a property comes up before us, I just always wonder how we are going to pay to manage it. And so I want to be really clear by what I mean about that. And, you know, I think there's creative methods of, you know, besides just M&O funding. But I think as part of the 2020 process, we really, really need to be thoughtful about how we are going to fund managing these properties into the future. It's a big deal. Managing land is very, very expensive. And I just, in our excitement to get these properties, I don't want to lose sight of that. You know, another thing that pops into my head is when, like, for example, on the dairy, I think it said there was five houses and, you know, all the dairy buildings. You know, what is the department going to do with infrastructure like that in place? So glad that the 2020 process is thoughtful and really is taking our time looking at these properties. And I want to be really creative. Maybe that's partners. Maybe it's, you know, I thought of mitigation banking, carbon credits were brought up, but I want to be thoughtful about how we're going to pay for this.
Thank you, Commissioner Linville. Okay, Larry Phillips, and then Commissioner McKaysey, please.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Carpenter. Good morning, Commission. Larry Phillips, Region 6 Director. I just wanted to share real quick with everyone that, you know, the transparent process we've been involved with Grays Harbor County Commissioners and also the Dairy Association out there. Cynthia and myself and Brian met with the County Commissioners, had a good conversation. The takeaway from that was, let's try to find a way to work together on this. We know there's some competing interests there. So I think we're in a real good spot. We continue to have those conversations and lots of details to be worked out, but we think there's a middle ground here potentially that we could work toward. But again, this land is for sale right now. Our ultimate objective is to make sure that you know, we're moving forward in a way that's helpful, put some tools in our toolbox to meet our conservation mission and also recreational opportunity in this land, has the potential to do that. I also wanted to share real quick, just an appreciation of staff. I don't know if you can appreciate the workload associated so far with Cynthia, her team, Brian, Region 5, Cassina Lee and others, and through this LANDS 2020 process, particularly this year, it has been a workload that I you know, I can't even begin to describe here, but I just appreciate the staff and all the work they've done, and look forward to continuing with this transparent process, and hope we can get this across the finish line at some point. So thank you.
Thank you, Larry. Okay, Commissioner McIsaac, and then I see Commissioner Smith has her hand up. Commissioner McIsaac, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question on the funding dynamics. On your last slide, you have a bullet that talks about exploring funding opportunities, then continued discussion and outreach, transaction processing, and then the commission final approval. And so I'm just thinking about the commission's role here in prioritizing funding decisions between spending money on this and Initiative 24B that we don't know about yet, but that could come up as a competitor for such funding. So could you refresh our memory on how that works? When we end up approving land acquisitions, normally it doesn't seem that the funding is a problem, or that the trade-offs are a problem. And so does this come from dedicated funding from the legislature, so it's not a question of trading off department priorities? Or how does that exactly work between the director's approval and when the commission sees it again, and if there are any funding trade-offs to be considered?
Cynthia, you want to answer that before we go to Commissioner Smith?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Carpenter. Thanks, Commissioner McIsaac, for the question. Actually, that's something that we often have had in the overall presentation and didn't include this time, so I'll remember that for next year. Yes, these funds, we do not have operating funds available for purchase in the vast majority of lands purchases. We go to state and federal funding sources and grant applications. That's our predominant. So the Washington Wildlife and Recreation Coalition, and the Section 6 Land and Water Conservation Fund under the ESA are really the major places. In the past, we have utilized Pittman Robertson funds. It's been several bienniums since we've been in a position to do that. And I don't foresee that happening in the future. So this does not take away from our operating abilities and your decision-making with regards to other parts of the agency. I appreciate that question very much. And if I may speak to Commissioner Linville's question and concern about land management and O&M, we have recently in the past couple of bienniums made some great strides with the legislature in terms of building in maintenance level requests for operating funds for newly acquired lands. And we presented before estimate on a realistic per acre number. And so every request for new lands that we put in goes also to the legislature with a projection of what our O&M responsibilities will be. And then that's been coming to us as increased in our baseline budget. So that has been great, and have just recently also, as you say about the creative opportunities, we recently became aware of a new RCO policy that allows lands purchased with RCO funds to utilize the carbon credit market capacity. So that's something that we will be looking into as well. I think there's a lot of momentum and interest and creativity out there right now, just encouraged by that energy, and also encouraged by the increased public profile and interest in public lands, and the increased interest in being able to actually address some of our maintenance backlog, and you know, get us to a place where we are doing a better job with our ability to manage these lands for their intent. Thank you.
Thank you, Cynthia. Okay, Commissioner Smith, and then Commissioner Anderson.
I also just want to say what a great job and what thorough, you know, hard work, Cynthia, your team has done on this. I'm really impressed. And I really am 100% supportive of the Centralia Mine Reclamation Project. I think it's just a win-win project for everybody. You know, mines are required to, you know, reclaim the lands after they are done mining. And this gives an opportunity to reclaim these lands in a way that's going to be most beneficial to wildlife. And, you know, we're doing this with little outlay for the department. I just think this is a great project. One comment I wanted to make about the Chehalis Basin and the farmlands we're looking at purchasing. Larry, you mentioned that the property is currently for sale. I'm assuming that there are not dairy farmers clamoring to purchase this property. So it's probably not likely that, you know, were we not to purchase it and some other entity was, it seems unlikely that the dairy farming would continue. Unfortunately, that's kind of the trend. I mentioned before here in Jefferson County, we have a Jefferson Land Trust that's been actively putting farming and conservation easements over properties to allow farmers to stay on the land. But it's, you know, it's a pricey proposition to do that. And I'm not sure that's the charge of our department. But yeah, work well done. Just kudos. And I'm excited about these projects.
Thank you, Commissioner Smith. Okay, we have Commissioner Anderson and then Vice Chair Baker, please. Commissioner Anderson.
Yeah, one of the just quick response to Commissioner Smith, and she understands it well. A lot of these farmers, their model is to lease existing properties because property values are so high, and new farmers can't get into the market. They can't afford, you know, $10,000-$15,000 an acre for ag land. Used to be they'd either inherit it or pay $500, and so making sure, you know, just being cautious as we proceed so that we're not preempting through our efforts business models that viable dairies might be able to operate is important. My question to Cynthia is with regard to the PILT and where that change is at in the legislature. And it brings up the question of has that moved forward this year? And are we looking at that in a better light than we have in the past?
Absolutely. Chair Carpenter and Commissioner Anderson, thank you for that question. Yeah, I'm pleased to report that we continue to progress in the legislature in the PILT legislation and reform. And we did pass a committee on the Senate side. So we went through the Senate and through the Senate floor, and now we were in House committee. We passed through House committee. We're now awaiting House appropriations. And so it was quite good momentum. And good news, as you heard from the director, is that the legislature, the Senate budget, did actually put the PILT funding for DFW into the treasurer's budget. So that's a good sign that that's where they're wanting to account for the money, which is the major change in the legislation. And I would also like to, I meant to speak to that we have also been coordinating with the State Conservation Commission and having conversations with the conservation districts with regards to, you know, again, what's the appropriate, partnership model with regards to the working lands implications of these places and maintaining their conservation value as well. So I'm just hopeful that we will continue those good discussions and figuring out what's kind of best in overall in how the department and our conservation recreation mission fits into a landscape level vision, both for the fish, wildlife, and ecosystems and the communities in statewide, but in particular in these two projects that have been generating a lot of this recent discussion.
Okay, we have three commissioners with their hands up, and we do have a fair number of public that want to comment on this issue. So we are getting potentially a little behind, but Commissioner Baker, Commissioner Kuntz, and then Commissioner Linville, please. Commissioner, Vice Chair Baker, please.
Thank you, Chair Carpenter. My comment will be very brief. I wanted to just say that I have been continually, since I've been on the commission, impressed with the work that the lands people have done for us. And I also wanted to remind us that when they come to us at the beginning of the year with this lands 2020, and this year six properties, those are six that remain after vetting many. We aren't out there scratching around trying to find this or that. We have people who want to, hold on a minute, my grandson's here. Just a minute, Soren, to sell us stuff. And we go through this extensive process to figure out if we can, if it's a match, and if we have the money, and all of those things that Cynthia talked about. So what I wanted to make the point, just, Soren, stop. Just that these are the ones that have met all of those tests, not the ones, it's certainly not what they began with years ago, probably. That's my only comment. Sorry for the peanut gallery up there.
It's hard for me to imagine that you're a grandma. You look totally too young for that.
Yeah, right. Go ahead.
Commissioner Kuntz, and then Commissioner Linville, please. Fred.
First of all, kudos to the team, but I was just following up really on Commissioner Linville and Anderson and others' concern about the cost, and I was going to ask about the PILT payments also, but one thought is that for whether it's PILT payments or support of the community or operating costs, I think as we move forward, the more clear that we make that our lands serve multiple purposes. Because I think there's still a feeling out in the public that, you know, they're for hunting and fishing, which is great. But I think that as we work on the wildlife management plans for the area, and as we put together creative ideas moving into the future, the more that we can demonstrate that these lands are important for all Washingtonians, for the biodiversity they contain, for the expansive kinds of recreational opportunities, I think that we'll gain greater support. So I would, you know, encourage everybody to, you know, kind of market these ideas and lands in a very broad, you know, entire state approach.
Thank you, Commissioner Kuntz. Commissioner Linville, please.
I have a question. When the department purchases lands, let's use the Centralia Mine project as an example. Is there sort of a set in general, like expectation for what needs to be done first on those lands? Like I'm coming from the federal wildlife refuge system where if we purchased lands, the first thing it was boundary fence, boundary signs, parking lots, you know, there was a lot of like first initial structures that went in right off the bat. And I was just curious if that's true for the department. And I'm sorry, I don't know that. I probably should already know that. Does that cost get rolled in somewhere?
Yeah, Chair Carpenter, Commissioner Linville, thank you for that question as well. Often, actually, the grants that we apply for include some initial management, so boundary fencing, weed treatment, you know, some of those really critical things at the beginning are envisioned at the grant application stage, and then the funding is available for that within the grant that pay for the actual acquisition. I would have to say that in answer to your question, not surprising to you, is that every case is different. So things will be prioritized in different order and different needs. But we do ask all of those kinds of questions about the existing infrastructure and needs associated with that kind of immediate issue in our lands 2020. And then the other thing that we also are very cognizant of in our transactions is public access and ensuring that, you know, what that public access looks like and that that is able to be offered to the public in a clear manner.
Okay, Brian, please, you'll be the last one, and we need to go to public comment, if I may.
I'll make it quick. I just wanted to address part of Commissioner Linville's comment in that, you know, you mentioned the Centralia mine, and do we have an idea? And I just wanted to kind of give the field, this is a part we haven't talked about a lot, is one of the things we've done with that project is assemble a technical team of field staff to look at the property and work with TransAlta on inventorying what's there and what we want the area to look like in terms of habitats, but they'll also be looking at access provisions as well.
Thank you, Brian. Cynthia and Lisa, and Brian, thank you to all for the hard work and very thorough and complete presentations. So, okay, we're going to go now. We have some folks that want to make public comment. Nikki.
All right, we'll now take public comment from registered attendees. As a reminder, everyone receives 3 minutes for comment unless the allotted time is modified by the chair at the onset of the agenda item. Everyone is currently muted on the, and if you're on the phone, star 9 unmutes, and shouldn't have reworded it last minute. When it's your turn to speak, you will be recognized by your partial phone number or your Zoom username, and you will be unmuted by staff. You will be asked to state your name for the record, just as if you were attending the meeting in person.
Nikki, can you tell me how many people we have?
Yeah, I've got 6. We're going to start with Elizabeth Roderick. Okay. Go ahead, Elizabeth. You've been unmuted.
Good morning, commissioners and staff. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Oh, great. Okay. I'm Elizabeth Roderick, representing 1,300 members of the Black Hills Audubon Society in Thurston, Lewis, and Mason counties. And I'm a retired wildlife biologist. Just want to let you know that Black Hills Audubon supports all of the department's proposed land acquisition projects for 2021. And I want to focus briefly on the Centralia Mine Project. One of our members has conducted breeding bird surveys for the USGS Biological Survey throughout the TransAlta property since at least 2005 and has recorded 146 bird species on just a single pond. And we also are concerned that this large landscape was identified in a statewide connectivity analysis as being an important linkage in wildlife movement corridor between the Cascades and Southwest Washington. So we wanted to emphasize that. We also think that the department is the best agency to oversee the final mine reclamation and restore fish and wildlife habitat, as well as providing public access. Studies have also shown that outdoor recreation can bring economic activity and more service jobs to areas with public access. I know that the economy is a special concern in Lewis County. Also wanted to mention that the fear of endangered species moving to surrounding lands is unlikely. The species targeted for restoration here, the Oregon spotted frog, western pond turtle, and streak-horned lark, are shallow wetland and grassland species, all have narrow habitat requirements and are very unlikely to move off of the wildlife area into the surrounding forest lands. That's it, and thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments today, Elizabeth. Next, Nikki.
Next, we have Cody Duncan. You've been unmuted, Cody.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
All right, great. Thank you, Fish and Wildlife Commission, for the opportunity to speak this morning on behalf of TransAlta. My name's Cody Duncan, and I'm the project lead on the TransAlta Mine Property Project. Really here just to emphasize TransAlta's commitment and our excitement in this project. We really see extreme value and potential and a great opportunity in front of us. a couple of the ways with our TransAlta's commitment to sustainability as a company, we see this aligning perfectly. And it's also a very unique and strong business decision. So I get often asked about the donation of a part of the property. And it really comes down to the realization, and Brian alluded to the technical team and what we've worked on to this point, that some of our open property that isn't timbered would be preferred to stay that way. And so that reduces our reclamation scope. Also, some small water bodies that we intended to take out would be left for aquatic species benefits. And so those gains is what allows that donation to be possible. We also see it fitting perfectly with the vision of Fish and Wildlife, as we've had a 20 plus year partnership in the management of our Skookumchuck wildlife area. And this is a much larger footprint with a lot of those same advantages, but also gives Fish and Wildlife the opportunity to put input into the reclamation plan. And last, the community benefit for outdoor and recreation opportunity on this acreage long-term is something we're excited about as well. I'll admit we're still early on in this process. We have a lot of details to work out, and the things I'm speaking on today are what we know so far. Ultimately, we need to develop a plan for our reclamation with the input of Fish and Wildlife that is approved by the Office of Surface Mining. They're all federal regulator in reclamation. And they require us to complete the reclamation in a way that achieves proper soil chemistry and slope stability, vegetation, drainage control, water quality. We have to do the work, and then we have to prove that it's good enough in order to achieve bond release. And there's a time involved in that. From an O&M perspective for Fish and Wildlife, we see no need for that for some time, as we will be continuing to manage the property moving forward until we achieve that bond release. And I know in closing, I really just want to comment on the willingness of TransAlta to continue the conversations on this project, specifically at the local county community level. As Cynthia mentioned, there has been some local opposition that TransAlta has been in the community now for 20 plus years. We take pride in our reputation as a community partner, and we really want to find a way to make this project be one that is supported at the federal level, the state level, and the local level. Thank you for your time this morning, and I'm happy to answer questions.
Bodie, thank you for your comments today. I don't see any hands up, so have a good day, please. Nikki, next, please.
Next, we have Jay Gordon. You've been unmuted, Jay.
Good morning. You hear me all okay?
Yeah, you're a little soft, but yes.
Okay, I'll get a little bit closer. For the record, my name is Jay Gordon. I'm the policy director for the Washington Dairy Federation. I'm also a longtime farmer in the Chehalis Valley. Comments are, in particular, it sounds like you've gotten our letter from both the Dairy Federation and the Farm Bureau. So comments will be restricted to C and B, with the exception that I would like to go back. I cannot remember which commissioner asked regarding ag and the previously approved area east of the highlighted area that you guys already own. As a longtime farmer in the valley, I don't recall this being an issue, and I can tell you personally, those lands east of the current owned property have not been farmed other than some hay in a few areas. It's real low, it's tough dirt, doesn't have irrigation. Hate to say this because I'm a farmer, but that land's pretty good use for fish and wildlife. It's not much good for farming. On the contrary, as our letter highlights, Area C and Area B are prime farmland. It's great soil. It sats up dirt. It floods. It's not at risk of housing conversion. It's a current active dairy. As I mentioned in our letter, there's a lot of infrastructure there that if you purchased it, would, in order to keep this a viable dairy, and be affiliated with the current leasee, who is a first generation, and I meant when I said in the letter, a just absolute wonderful guy. Apologize for not getting comments in. Somehow, this did not get into the ag community until the last couple of days of comments period, and we weren't able to get organized. I will tell you, the leasee also was not aware that the property was for sale. So it kind of came last minute of all of a sudden. So apologize again for that. I guess really want to highlight if you come out and visit this and look at that property, the area of concern that's been identified a number of times by different staff members is the little creek that runs along the east edge of Parcel C. You know, the CREP program could adequately take care of the riparian concerns in that. And so when you look at the rest of the property, and that it's a dairy, and that it has lots of infrastructure, and that it has lots of houses, I'll reiterate what I said in the letter, which is I question whether this is a good, I heard the word match for the department. Does the public need access? Is this a good fit? Are there other programs could address resource concerns on that working and leave this in private land ownership? That's the end of my comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Jay, for your comments today. Next, Nikki, please.
Next, we have Terry Willis. Go ahead, Terry. You've been unmuted.
I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Oh, good. Thank you. This is Terry Willis. And while I don't wear any fancy hats, I'm simply a citizen of Grays Harbor County, and I'm also an ag producer. Our farms, my husband and I have been farming this area for the last 50 years. And I'm very familiar with the areas that you have outlined in the SATSEP area that Jay Gordon was just talking about. I'm going to try not to cover the same area, the same concerns that Jay did, but I do have a couple of things to add to it. I've been opposed to this since we started the conversation because it does involve prime agricultural land, land that is needed and in short supply in Grays Harbor County. Only about 3% of the total land mass in Grays Harbor County is actually qualifies as prime land and you can be used for commercial agriculture. B and C are those prime grounds. And I'd like to say they're not only good soils, they're great soils. I'll put those soils up against any soils in the state of Washington for raising crops on and say that they can compete very well. You've covered several things and one of them I heard you say is about the fear of development of open space lands. Grays Harbor County for decades now has had some very stringent ordinances against taking our prime grounds, Ag 1 and Ag 2, and either putting a development on them or even an incompatible use that would interfere with the agricultural process. Those being in place, they've been here for decades, they've served us well, and they were thought of way before GMA even went down that road. So you can take that off of the worry list as to why WDFW might need to purchase these lands. The land is frequently flooded. That's what makes it prime agricultural land. The very rivers that flow over this land leave the soils behind that we can use for growing crops. The property is also support that local dairy that you've been talking about. He's one of our last dairymen in the county, and we prize him greatly. Not only is he a great human being, but we want to see him grow and prosper. And he needs these lands in order to keep his dairy active. My husband and I dairied for 35 years, so I'm very familiar with the types of activities that a dairy needs. And if WDFW is suggesting that they will lease the land after they purchase it back to the dairyman, I know of at least two habits or activities that WDFW is not real keen on, and that is the spreading of liquid manure or the grazing of cattle. And those activities are essential to this local dairyman. His dairy basically won't exist without addressing those issues.
You're at time, Terry.
Okay. Bottom line is there's also, I heard you say infrastructure on here too. There is other infrastructure that's critical to agriculture that WDFW doesn't need. There's a lagoon, there's housing for hundreds of animals, and there's probably an irrigation water right. I'm an ex-commissioner, and I know you as a board make some really tough decisions. And I'm saying this one's not as tough as others can be. The prime grounds in this particular spot should be taken out of this. There are plenty of other areas. You've got like 1600 acres in this area that you could work with, but I think the agricultural part needs to be removed. Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you guys today.
Thank you, Terry. You might hold on a minute. Commissioner Thorburn has a question or comment. I don't know if it's for you, but Commissioner Thorburn.
Thank you. Well, I didn't get my hand up fast enough for a question to Jay, but Terry, it sounds like you can probably answer this. Jay said that the creek could be managed by, I think he said CRIP program. Was that meaning CRP and or one of the NRCS programs? And is that available within the county if that's what was meant? In other words, was he offering a private lands option for conservation management as a tool?
Yes, Commissioner Thornburg, I can answer that for you. I was a supervisor for the Grays Harbor County Conservation District for several years. Actually, I followed Jay Gordon as he retired. I took his position. And you're talking about CREP, C-R-E-P, and that's a working lease with landowners to plant a riparian base that has trees and wildlife coverage and that sort of thing along the land and for long-term, with long-term contracts. One of the properties that my husband and I actually work with is probably one of the most successful WRP processes. It's kind of the same thing. It's kind of the same program, only wrapped a little differently. It was over 400 acres. They wrapped it in trees and new plantings and stuff that hadn't been there for decades. And we formed the centers of them. There's open fields there. And I can assure you it attracts wildlife like nobody's business. We now have bear in that activity. We grow corn down there, and the bear and the deer and the raccoons and whoever, you know, are constantly in the fields, which is fine with us. It's a great use of the soil. It's a great use of the area. And you could apply this same process to the lands east of this prime ground along that creek.
Thank you.
Thank you, Terry, for your comments today. Nikki, next, please.
Next is Tom Davis, followed by Jonathan Talmadge, and those are the last two.
Thank you very much.
Go ahead, Tom.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Great. Hey, first of all, let me just thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the commission, for your service and the important work that you all do. So again, I'm Tom Davis with the Washington Farm Bureau, here this morning to share some thoughts with you about the Chehalis Wildlife Area expansion proposal. And just as a side note, I can't believe it's been that many years, but I was with the department in 2005 and was one of the staff who helped develop the Lands 2020 approach. So it's wonderful to see it continue to be implemented wonderfully, by the way, by your staff. Please note that several of us within the ag world missed the public comment announcement that went out in January, and therefore the summary of the comments you've received to date on this project don't accurately, we believe, capture the concern that many farmers and ranchers have with the proposal, and you've heard some of those this morning. The project is unique, and the farmer who would be impacted by the state's purchase of this land is also unique. 6 years ago, the Farm Bureau featured the heartwarming story of Mr. Torres, who had recently taken over the dairy where he himself had worked for nearly 20 years. Please note that in Washington state, less than 10% of all the farms are owned by Latino farmers. In Grays Harbor County, USDA data shows there are 469 farms. Of those, only 8 farms are operated by Latino farmers. Think about that. Only 8 out of the county's 469 farms are owned by Latinos. Mr. Torres' story is one founded on decades of hard work, culminating in the purchase of a portion of this dairy farm. For a beginning farmer, especially a dairy farm, the cost can be prohibitive to start. For Mr. Torres, being able to buy the farm buildings and lease the surrounding land from his former employer was absolutely necessary to operating the farm and was an ideal scenario. The loss of those lands if purchased by the department will likely lead to the closure of this dairy. But you know, this doesn't have to happen. as you've heard, I think already mentioned this morning, other options do exist that would enable the existing owner to sell the land, would allow the department to protect the portions of the property with high conservation and recreational values, and provide Mr. Torres with the farmland he needs to remain economically viable. This approach will need the willingness of the landowner, Mr. Torres, as well as ongoing conversations and creative thinking involving the department, the Office for Farmland Preservation, interested land trusts, Farm Bureau, and other interested parties. So we ask for your patience and your support of an alternative approach to the Chehalis Wildlife Area expansion proposal. Hey, thank you very much for the opportunity to talk with you this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. Next, Nikki.
Technical issues here. Hold on. All right. Last, we've got Jonathan Talmadge. Go ahead, Jonathan, and let me know if I said your last name wrong, because how you have it listed on there.
You've got it correct.
Okay.
Thank you for the opportunity to comment, and I appreciate you giving me a call. I'm a little scattered because I'm a duck hunter, and I thought I had registered for just the general public comment earlier this morning, and so I lost my notes, jumped into work, and thank you for sending an email and informing me I have an opportunity to comment. So the issue that I wanted to comment on today is the Skagit Wildlife Unit, specifically the Farmed Island Unit, that recently, I think February, is designated for levee removal and flooding. And so basically, as a duck hunter on the west side of the state, we are losing what is the most productive duck hunting unit in the entire state, in my opinion. If you look at numbers, it's definitely the most productive on the west side of the state. And this Skagit Wildlife Area, everything out there is tidal, which means unless you have a +5-foot tide, it's inaccessible, except for this farmed island unit, which is permanently above ground and accessible all year round. I've hunted this unit for the last 25 years. There's an Eagle Scout project on this island that I believe is over half a century old, and that's just going to be flooded and lost. So I'm hoping the state can send out archaeologists to site that that area. But the issue I've got is the mitigation. I don't know if there's any other accessible duck hunting within an hour of Seattle. And over the last, my grandfather used to hunt the Kent Valley, which had public lands there to duck hunt, which are no longer accessible. And I'm losing this big portion up in Skagit, which I typically hunt. And areas like, Snoqualmie Valley, which had Cherry Valley units and other duck hunting units, now favor pheasant hunters. So there's signs posted that don't allow hunting before 8 a.m. So for a duck hunter from Seattle, this is a huge kick in the chops. And to have, a unit that's that productive, lost for people from Seattle driving north, and there's really nothing, applicable. And I haven't heard anything for mitigating for opening up other areas for duck hunting. So it's just tough for me as a guy in Seattle. I drive over the First Avenue South Bridge and look off to my sides, and I see people camping in tidal estuaries off the Duwamish River. And I know that we're doing this for salmon habitat restoration in the Skagit, but to see ongoing destruction of salmon habitat in other areas of the state, then to take this unit from duck hunters to me seems ridiculous when there's no public push to do anything about other areas that are being detrimentally affected. So I don't know. It's incredibly frustrating to see that. I've reported this area to a lot of people. It's a tidal area right off the Duwamish River under the First Avenue South Bridge that, the state had set up to kind of clean the tidal waters and help clean the polluted areas of the Duwamish. And now you've got people camping on its shores, eroding its shores. And to look at that and see no efforts by the state to do anything yet, we're going to take away this productive unit from duck hunters is really difficult. And typically, people on the east side, I think duck hunting are more unified. And I think duck hunters on the west side, duck hunting is a sport where you got to get up at 4 a.m. and hunt out in the rain. And those guys aren't going to get on Zoom chats. And we're not a very organized group here on the west side. So just wanted to voice
that. Okay,
thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Okay, that I believe concludes the Lands 2020 briefing and public comment period. I see, I think I saw Commissioner Linville with her hand up looking for a break, so I'll assume that's correct. It's now 10:58. We will take a break until 11:15, please.